Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Well, hopefully you made it through the week because this is the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and hey, you know who's here on Friday.
Start spreading the news.
Well, that music means Schomburg Stu has decided to join us. How you doing, Stu?
I'm okay. How about you?
Oh, well, you know, hey, I made it, right? So if you'd like to call into the podcast and talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link and follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, we still don't have Stu on Twitter, but I am out there at Burke Time. And as always, if you'd like to send Stu a message, I would gladly forward it along to him. So just keep it clean. That's all. That's all we ask. So. All right, well, we are rolling along here. It's game three of the World Series tonight. It's a 1-1 series, and I heard something today that I thought, you know, like I'm not a Brian Kenny fan. I actually think he's kind of a moron. He said one of the possibly stupidest things I have ever heard today. He actually mentioned that he believes that the Tampa Bay Rays punted the first game, more or less meaning they let themselves lose, so they would have a better chance of winning game two. Now, humorously, I saw this the exact opposite way because the Dodgers made horrendous pitching decisions in game two. You know, they went away from, you know, what could have been a quality starter in Julio Urias, who has given them really good innings throughout the season, and they decided to go with Tony Gonsolin. Not only did they not start Urias, they didn't even use him. And I just thought, honestly, that that was an incredibly bad decision. And if anybody punted a game, it was the frickin' Dodgers two nights ago. So I don't know what the heck he was talking about. Did you see anything in game one? Because obviously I couldn't watch the whole thing. But did you see anything that made you think Tampa was giving a game away, so to speak? And it's the World Series. Who does that?
No, I don't understand where he's coming from, because they certainly played hard, but they're up against a top pitcher, and the Dodgers have a potent offense, and it showed in game one, and in fact, they made a nice comeback in game two also, falling a little short, but I certainly don't understand how he come up with a statement like that. I do, as you pointed out, question the Dodgers pitching in the second game. I can't figure that out myself, but maybe they're so confident that their second-rate pitching will be okay for them and that they can throw a game away and wind up winning in five games. Of course, I predicted them winning six myself, and I'm sure they're the overwhelming favorites to win the World Series anyway.
Yeah, they are tonight. Let me see. I just saw it here. They are a run and a half favorite tonight. And then the game itself is scheduled for 7.5, the over-under on runs scored. But, yeah, I guess I kind of understand what the Dodgers were trying to do. You know, they were hoping you would run a reliever out there and get a couple good innings, and you go on to the next one and you hope you get a couple good innings out of him. You know, because Dave Roberts flat out came out and said it was going to be a bullpen game. But for whatever reason, not go with Julio Urias, who actually is a starting pitcher. You know, I believe he's only made one postseason start. And, you know, with the way the Dodgers kind of handle these goofy things analytically, it literally almost makes me want to root against them because they do some of the stupidest things I've ever seen. You know, to not even get him in the game and to just let these other relievers go out there and, you know, struggle or scuffle. And you know, I mean, I knew right away watching it that Gonsolin didn't have it, but they left him in there. Let him try to figure things out, and they went away from a guy. Now, here's Urias' stats, Stu. He's appeared in 4 games, and he's made 1 start. Now, he's thrown 16 innings for them. He's actually managed to happen to get the win in every game he pitched, and he's 4-0. His ERA is 0.56, and he struck out 16 guys while only walking 3. For some reason, that's a guy they couldn't figure out how to use in game 2.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense when you think about it. And why? I guess the only reason they decided on a bullpen start was because there were no days off in the division series and the championship series in the National League, because you never hear of anything like that happening in the World Series. And now they do have that one day off. They're doing the normal format now. So I hope there won't be any more of that pitching by committee type thing anymore for the remainder of the World Series.
Yeah, well, I did see they are bringing Urias back to start tomorrow, but you know, here this becomes my problem with this. If Walker Buehler has a bad start, like he did against the Braves in Game 1 of the championship series, all of a sudden you're down 2-1. You know, if Urias doesn't have it in game 4, you're down 3-1, and now you're praying for Clayton Kershaw to pull you out of the fire in game 5. Why not start Urias in game 2 and try to win and take a 2-0 lead? You know, it just seemed incredibly stupid, and you can't tell me he wasn't rested because he hasn't pitched since, and I'm going to have to double-check this. Because I know he appeared in the division series, but he hasn't pitched in frickin' at least a week, maybe more. Let me see. His last appearance was Sunday the 18th, and he only pitched 3 innings. So it's not like he was out there hucking away, and he only threw 39 pitches. So there's no reason he couldn't have came back and started game 2. And I'm so tired of just, you know, listening to this sabermetric crap about, well, you know, you've got to save this guy for this situation. It's the World Series. These are the best teams. You know, if you were playing the Pittsburgh Pirates in a series, well, I could understand. The Rays had the best freaking record in the American League. They're here for a reason, and you just handed them a game. In reality, the Dodgers deserve to lose this series now because they're stupid.
Yeah, I really question his judgment there because, as you pointed out, he's done very well at pitcher during the playoffs especially. So why doesn't he have any confidence in him? I mean, I don't understand his thinking. And did he give any rationale because of his decision making?
No, you know, they never did say why Gonsolin was the choice. And I would have really loved to know that, considering he had an ERA over 9 in the postseason. I would love to know why this is the guy you chose to run out there to make the start. I mean, you know, I know Dustin May followed him and had some issues as well. But going into the game, May was the better pitcher. You know, you have a veteran like Alex Wood on your playoff roster. Another guy, I don't know. You know, my guess is, and I don't, you know, again, I have no information on this. For some reason, with the exception of Kershaw, because he's Clayton Kershaw, there must be something in their sabermetrics or analytics that doesn't want them using left-handed pitchers against the Rays over the long term. You know, because Urias is left-handed, Wood is left-handed. You know, it's stupid that you're looking at a computer to make these decisions when the World Series is on the line. But that's what these idiots do, and you can't.
It's like Trey Flowers back, there's taller muscles.
So.
Yeah, I will say this. I will say this. If the Dodgers win the game tonight. If they win the game tonight, I think they're going to run the table. I think it'll be over in five games. But that's a big if they win the game tonight. I do think they're deep enough that they'll get the job done, and they'll get some good pitching tomorrow, and, of course, on game five, where we know who's going to be pitching in that one.
Yeah. And that makes it even weirder with the way they handled game two, because it's like, instead of going five games, you could have won it in four, which I always thought was the better thing. I mean, you don't get paid any extra for playing another game. You know, the only one who makes money if you play a game is the TV network.
Exactly right. Yeah, it was a strange move, but we'll see how it plays out tonight, but I do think that if the Dodgers win tonight, it's the series is over. It's done.
Yeah, well, you know, like I came on here with Dan on, it must have been Tuesday before game two or Wednesday before game two, whenever they played it. You know, and that's what I told them. If the Dodgers won game two, they would sweep because they would have all this momentum, and they gave away, you know, because like game one, they were dominant and they looked like the team. And they gave that all away in game two. And I know, like you mentioned, they made a little comeback, but I don't think they ever really threatened to win the game. So, you know, I don't want to hear the Joe Madden BS about how there's no such thing as momentum in baseball, because tell that to a guy who's locked in at the plate that there's absolutely no momentum. So I just don't understand the decision making, and you know, and the fact that you don't allow your manager to literally make decisions. It's all sabermetrically made for him, and he can't go a different route. They give him the lineup, and they give him who's available to pitch.
That just sabermetrics goes too far sometimes, and I think that's a flaw in how a team plays the game. Of course, if the Dodgers wind up winning the World Series anyway, as everybody suspects, it'll all be forgotten.
Yeah, well, you know, and I know this loss doesn't mean as much to some people as it does to me. I just really didn't get it. But here, I'll throw you the lineups for tonight because they're out already. Mookie Betts leads off for the Dodgers. No surprise there. Corey Seager hits second. Justin Turner is third. Max Muncy is fourth. Will Smith is fifth. He's going to DH tonight. Cody Bellinger hits sixth. Chris Taylor hits seventh. Jack Peterson hits eighth. And Austin Barnes hits ninth. He'll do the catching. Walker Buehler, of course, will start for the Dodgers. This is basically their lineup, their starting lineup against right-handed pitching. And then when the Rays bring in a lefty reliever, they'll remove some of those guys. Tampa's going with Austin Meadows leading off. Brandon Lau hitting second. Randy Arozarena hits third. G-Man Choi is fourth. Manuel Margot hits fifth. Joey Wendell is sixth. Willie Adames is seventh. Kevin Kiermaier is eighth. Mike Zunino hits ninth. And then they're starting Charlie Morton. So this may be the best starting pitching matchup of the series. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, when you look at the lineups, though, on paper, and the Dodgers have the more talented team, but I have to give a lot of props to Tampa. They may not have as much talent as the Dodgers, but they know how to play the game. They know how to.
Yeah.
They're situational hitters, unlike most teams in the majors nowadays, and that is why they've done so well in the American League.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they have to do things differently than a lot of teams because obviously they can't spend that money. They have a really good developmental system, and they know how to use their bullpen. I mean, obviously I'm not a fan of the stupid opener thing because, like A.J. Pierzynski said, the guy who goes out there and starts the game is the starting pitcher. He's not an opener. He's the starting pitcher. Doesn't matter how many innings he lasts. He's the starting pitcher. So, that I thought that was kind of stupid. But, they handle it well, and again, it's what they've got to do to get by. And I mean, they take these guys. If you look at a guy like, Choi was a cast off. Nobody wanted him. The Mariners gave up on Zunino, so they picked him up. I believe Joey Wendell was a bit of a journeyman before he landed in Tampa Bay. You can kind of go back through the archives. I mean, Ben Zobrist didn't have much of a career until he landed in Tampa Bay. There's a slew of other guys you can point to. James Shields hit it really big with Tampa. So it's interesting. Whatever they do right. And, even though they haven't been to the World Series in a while, they're always winners, and they always seem to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, they're an impressive organization for sure, and without much in the way of financial resources, but they just seem to know how to make the clever acquisitions that always seem to work out well for them.
Yeah. So, in the end, the sad part is they can't keep any of these guys to put any kind of a run together, so they end up having to move them. I'm going to assume that somewhere down the line, Blake Snell will be traded, because they won't be able to afford him. I think Charlie Morton has mentioned he may retire after this year. But that becomes the sad part is they build up these guys and then they've got to ship them off. But at least they get the most out of them when they have them.
Yeah, and most times when that happens, they seem to make the proper acquisitions and don't spend a lot of money doing it, and they still remain the contending team.
Yeah, they do find a way to, pick up proper guys that fit their system, and then they know how to use them. They probably get the most out of their bullpen than any other team. So it's interesting to see how they go about business, and I'm really surprised more teams haven't tried to kind of emulate what they do, especially the smaller market teams. But who knows? Maybe it's difficult to do.
Yeah, and by the way, you and I are both baseball fans, and there's a lot of them out there. But did you notice that the ratings for the first two games were the lowest in history? Surprising.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not super shocked. They ran into some unexpected competition, because I believe they ended up going up against an NFL game kind of accidentally that got moved. And, sadly, no matter who's playing, and it's the weirdest thing because I don't think it was a very good game, you don't beat the NFL in ratings when it comes to sports.
No.
So, I'll never understand that because, if it's a bad game, I mean, like last night they had the Eagles and the Giants on, and I haven't looked at the rating, but I'm willing to bet it probably beat everything out except for maybe the debate because I know a lot of people watched that. But, landing number two isn't a bad place to be, and that, not a marquee matchup between two powerhouses, but people watch it.
Yeah, I did watch the last few minutes of that game after the debate was over, and it turned out to be quite an exciting game with a come-from-behind victory by Philadelphia.
yeah, you know, the Phillies made a fantastic comeback, and, you know, there was the humorous thing, you know, Daniel Jones looked like he had a touchdown and kind of tripped over his own feet. So, you know, at least they had that going on. But I did want to stick with baseball here because I seem to keep running into this debate, and I got to be honest, I'm really not sure what side of it I'm on, so I figured I would make you choose because Dan's not here. I'll probably make him choose on Monday. But the question seems to be, has Mookie Betts now surpassed Mike Trout as the best player in baseball?
Well, I don't think so. He's a very exciting, talented player and kind of streaky sometimes. I mean, sometimes his hitting just escapes him for a while, but he has some great defensive player as well. And he knows how to play the game. He's a good base runner. He's heady. He's smart. But I would not go as far to say that he's better than Trout overall.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, to be fair, I don't think you can really lose on either side of this debate. The difficult part is picking between them. You know, how do you make the decision? And I think the one advantage Betts has had is he's been on teams that have allowed him to get out on the big stage and perform and see his talent. Trout has never had that exposure to, like, the average fan or just the guy who happened to be watching. You know, it's the World Series, I'm going to watch. You know, Trout has never had that opportunity. So, you know, there are probably actually fans out there who have never seen him play live, you know, with the fact that the Angels are on the West Coast and their games are later. You know, there may be some markets that just haven't came across him yet. So I think I would probably still go with Trout, but I do think the gap is narrowed.
Well, of course, Trout still gets his accolades, even though he's not as well known as Betts because he hasn't played in any playoff games. But it certainly hasn't. His reputation is still out there. So the baseball world, at least the purists, know how good he is.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously, you know, the media loves him, you know, and they're always going to, you know, throw him out there. But, you know, again, like the general fan who isn't a diehard and, you know, isn't going to be hunting for certain things, you know, may not really realize, you know, what's going on with him. You know, and I mean, he even had a solid year this year. You know, he hit .281, ended up with 17 homers. You know, and 46 RBI. So he definitely put up his numbers. You know, not the MVP Mike Trout we're used to, but, you know, in this year, I don't think you can hold this year against anybody. So.
No, he certainly had a solid season and in 60 games. Although, as you pointed out, it wasn't as good as some of his previous years, but there are so many players throughout baseball who had down years because maybe you can blame it on the virus or the short schedule, but he didn't hurt himself with his stats for this year. Yeah, very respectable.
No, you know, while I don't want to crap on Betts because I do think he's a great player, remember that he won the MVP award the year the Red Sox were accused of cheating. So I don't know, you know, but like, you know, this year again, he was really solid. He hit .292 and he had 16 bombs. So, you know, overall, you know, career number wise, Trout's numbers are better with the exception of the 1 year Betts won the MVP award, of course. You know, defensively, I think Betts may be a little better defensively, with the exception of the arm. I think Trout has a better throwing arm. And I do believe it's getting to the point where Betts may be the, I don't want to say better base runner, but better base stealer, because that's not as big a part of a game as it used to be for Trout. And I don't think Joe Maddon would use him that way. So I think I would give Trout just a slight advantage. But again, you can't go wrong with either guy.
No, for sure. And Betts has made some great plays, defensive plays, in the playoffs so far for this season. And also he made some very, very astute and clever base running as well. So it's not just his bat that's helping the team.
And he got us free tacos. I mean, oh, sorry.
Yes. I haven't got mine yet.
No, I don't think. I think it's next week you can get it. So
okay,
you still have to wait.
Free tacos for next week.
You have to check and make sure you get, you know, the day and the time right and stuff, because there's only a, you know, Dan and I were going over that. There's only a certain time that you can go and get it. So you got to be careful.
It'll be okay for you. It's between 3 and 4 a.m.
Yeah, that'd work out nice for me. So.
Wouldn't it?
I did want to ask you here. I saw that the Gold Glove candidates were announced, and there were quite a few Cubs. And I didn't remember that them being that great defensively, but you know, two of their pitchers got nominated. You nominate three guys, Kyle Hendricks and Alec Mills as pitchers. I can understand Wilson Contreras at catcher, and it's no surprise Anthony Rizzo got nominated at first. But, you know, Nico Horner got a nomination at second, short. Let me see. Jason Hayward, I think he's won multiple. That's, again, no surprise. Were you as kind of surprised as I was that this many Cubs picked up nominations? Because, again, you probably saw more of them than I did. Were they that great defensively and I missed it?
No, you didn't miss a thing, and I'm surprised. I'm shocked that some of them, so many of them got selected. And I know there was one catcher who just recently came out with something, and he's not too happy about it either, who wasn't on the list. And for reasons unknown, it was Yadi Molina, who was commenting on the fact that he wasn't nominated. And I looked at his percentages for throwing out base runners, and I can't understand why he was left off the list. Can you?
Well, looking at the catchers nominated, because not only was it Wilson Contreras, but it was Tucker Barnhart of the Reds and then Jacob Stallings of the Pirates. So I don't understand how Molina missed out. I mean, I know Barnhart won the award a few years ago, and he's a really solid, you know, behind the plate kind of guy. And he's big on the sabermetric people like him because he's big on defensive runs saved. But I don't know Stallings well enough to figure out how he got a nod over Yadi.
Yeah, I can't either. And I wanted to ask you, this is very interesting now, in terms of deciding who was eligible for the Golden Glove Award as a catcher. Does framing come into consideration as part of the selection?
They do mention it here as part of the reason Wilson Contreras was nominated, because he improved as a pitch framer. But again, a lot of that is who you talk to. Because if you actually talk to a major league catcher, and David Ross went on record and say this, he'll tell you there's no such thing as pitch framing.
Yeah,
it's your relationship with the umpire that gets you those calls. You know, that's how it all works out for you. So, you know, the better you get along with an umpire, the more calls you're going to get for your pitcher as a catcher. You know, a lot of it doesn't matter. Look how he framed that. Well, who cares, you know?
Yeah, and I can't understand why Horner would be selected because he didn't play in that many games.
Yeah.
So why would someone select him as being that solid of an infielder?
Yeah, I don't know. Let me slide down here and see if they say anything about it at all. Oddly, they don't even mention him. He's nominated with Adam Frazier of the Pirates and Colton Wong of the Cardinals. Now, Wong won the award last year. And Frazier, the stat they use for Frazier is he led all second basemen in out above average metric. So again, we're spending a lot of time sabermetrically here, not who actually plays great defense, but who has the best sabermetric numbers.
Yeah,
so,
that's getting out of hand. Now, what did they say about Baez? Was it just his ability to catch a runner trying to steal because of his quick ability to make that quick tag?
Let's see what we got here. They say he continued to play superb defense this season besides struggling at the plate. And he finished only behind Fernando Tatis Jr. in the outs above average metric. So there you go, more metrics.
Yeah, that I think that, as I said before, that is getting out of hand. I mean, there are certain intrinsic ability of a baseball player that is not measured in sabermetrics, and I still contend that that's an important factor in the ability of how you really evaluate a baseball player.
Yeah, well, you know, the humorous thing about these defensive metrics is one, I don't remember if it was his last year in Pittsburgh or his second to last year. Sabermetrically, Andrew McCutchen was the worst defensive outfielder in baseball. Now, I don't know if anybody would ever believe that. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, they're positioned by your bench. So he was positioned ineffectively. So sabermetrically, he ranked badly. But at that time in his career, he was one of the best players in the league and coming off winning an MVP award. But they had him as the, you know, so there's where your flaws are with this. He was the worst defensive outfielder in baseball. Does anybody believe that?
I question that very much, because I can think off the top of my head a half a dozen others that are a lot worse than he is as a defensive outfielder. Starting locally in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, what the metrics are telling you is that Kyle Schwarber was a better outfielder than Andrew McCutchen. Do you believe that?
I got some property for you also in Florida that you might like.
Well, only if you buy that bridge I've had for sale for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I think they're getting out of hand with the sabermetrics. I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever. Well, that's the name of the game now. We got to adjust to our way of thinking and become sabermetrics friendly from now on, or else.
You know, and they seem to forget that, you know, there is such a thing that they used to use called the eye test, and that can tell you if a player is good or not, you know, over a period of time while you're scouting or watching or, you know, all that other fun stuff. So, yeah, if you pay attention to the game, you know, and I get it, you know, these are these dorks that don't want to sit there for 9 innings, but you give them the stats and they pump it into the computer, you know, and this is what it spits out, so this is what they run with. So, you know, here you go.
Yeah. I wonder if there are any scouts out there, old school scouts, who still look at some other intangibles before deciding whether a player is good enough to maybe be tendered an offer with a minor league affiliate of a major league team.
Yeah, you know, I hope that there are people who still at least listen, you know, to those kind of guys. You know, I know now with the way front offices are, pretty much, you know, everybody has a sabermetric department, and depending on which team you are, you know, like I mentioned, the Dodgers, they're, I don't know if he's the general manager or the president, but Andrew Friedman, he's strictly a sabermetric guy. So I don't even know if he would listen to an old-time scout, you know, if he told him something or mentioned something about how he saw this or he saw that, he would want to look at the numbers. So it's tough, but, you know, hopefully there still are some guys out there smart enough to listen.
Yeah, and how many times have we seen scouts, supposedly with a good reputation of evaluating baseball personnel, come up with a can't-miss candidate? This guy is going to be a superstar, and the guy falls on his face.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's, you know, it's, it, you know, and it happens to every team at some point in time. You know, you get these guys that are, oh yeah, well, you know, he's this and that. But again, you know, you're getting this guy who is this and that against what would be considered lesser competition. And, you know, it's difficult to kind of rate out where he would be against top level competition. You know, and that's another one of those things that Sabermetrics isn't going to tell you.
No,
you know, they're not going to tell you how, you know, how he would face up against, you know, the best pitchers in the game or the best reliever in the game. It's just going to spit out a generalization of the numbers you put in.
Yeah, the same thing applies in all different kind of sports. And even in horse racing, for example, and I'll bring this up very quickly, a horse could be a super in a B race, runs a fast race. Now, you move him up in class, he can run the same speed, and he's an also-ran because he just can't compete with a horse of a different class, a higher caliber. And the same thing applies, I guess, to all sports.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I mean, there, you know, I mean, just you can go down the list and, you know, count how many guys in every sport, you know, was a top draft pick and it just didn't work out. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you that. Would you say it's more prevalent in football? Would you say it's more prevalent, these guys who don't do the job that you think they were going to do in football, than baseball?
You know, I think it's more prevalent in football and then basketball because they immediately go into the league. You know, like when you're a baseball draft pick or a hockey draft pick, and I know a lot of the top NHL picks do go right to their team, but, you know, if you're picked later in the first round, and then with every baseball player just about, you go to the minor leagues. So fans don't see you. You know, I mean, they read your stats and maybe they catch a highlight here or there. But unless you live in the area, you know, you're not going out of your way to go to a minor league game. I mean, only idiots like Dan and I do that and drive to South Bend to see the Cubs play. You know, we do stupid stuff like that. But, you know, you don't see them. But yet in the NBA or the NFL, you draft this guy, and not only is he expected to play, he's expected to be an impact player. So when they're not, the questions start immediately. You know, I mean, would Mitchell Trubisky have been different if the Bears had drafted him and then we didn't see him for 3 or 4 years because he was in the minors developing? Maybe. You know, he had some time to learn or, you know, something like that. But that's not how the NFL works and how the NBA works. So
in general, in the NFL, the top schools are the ones that are usually drafted first, the players, as compared to some of the AA or AAA schools, for example. Isn't that the way it usually works out in most cases?
Yeah, you know, there's always a small school guy that'll pop up and go either late in the first round or early in the second. You know, like Carson Wentz was a Division II guy. He went to North Dakota State. So, you know, you'll see guys like, you know, like that occasionally show up early in a draft, but the majority of the time they're taken late in the first round or early in the second, because then it's, you know, if you're reaching back there, you're probably a good team, so you can afford to do it, and everybody thinks you're the smartest guy in the room, even if the guy doesn't work out.
Yeah, most likely, though, and usually they'll take an Ohio State player or a Notre Dame player, Stanford even, or USC, one of the big schools usually gets selected first. And it doesn't always work out that way for them either. They're not always successful.
No, you know, I mean, there's failures at every level from, you know, every school. Just like, you know, occasionally you get that surprise guy who, you know, pops up. I mean, obviously, you know, everybody's going to mention Tom Brady, a 6th-round draft pick, you know, who's going to go down as probably the best quarterback in history.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but that's the exception rather than the norm, of course.
There's the guy like, you know, Jimmy Butler was, I believe, a 2nd-round pick, you know, and he turned into a fantastic player. You know, you get those guys occasionally, but, you know, it's not, you know, too often that it happens.
No, for sure.
you know, and, you know, and again, you know, like we said, you know, sometimes with baseball, you notice it. And, you know, like the one guy I'm still curious about, you know, Byron Buxton was a top rated prospect all the way through the minors. And I believe he may have been the second pick in the draft when the Twins took him. He really hasn't had much of a major league career. So I'm wondering if maybe he's going to be one of these guys that, you know, in the end you look at and, you know, ends up being a bust.
It's possible. It's possible. He's been around a few years now, correct?
Yeah, you know, and unfortunately he's basically ended up, you know, injury prone and, you know, all that other stuff. And, you know, even when he played, I think with the exception of 1 year, and I want to double check this here to make sure I'm not selling the guy short. I don't think he's produced very, very much. Let me see here. He is a career 238 hitter, but the last 2 years he's hit better than that. He hit 264 this year, and he did hit 13 home runs, but with the ball gassed up as it was, I'm pretty sure Dan would have hit 13 home runs this season. Only played 39 games because of injury. Last year in the full season, he only played 87 because of injury, and then the year before that, he only played 28 because of injury. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing sometimes that some players, some baseball players are just injury prone, and they have a possibility of a promising career, but it's cut short because of year after year after year, it's those injuries that pop up, and they get compounded after a while, and they're never going to be the player you thought they were going to be because of that. Quite unfortunate.
You know, and then, you know, you look at, you know, the draft. I was correct. He was the number two pick. Carlos Correa went number one. Mike Zunino went third. Kevin Gausman went fourth. Kyle Zimmerman went fifth. And my guy Albert Almora went sixth.
That one will work out for you.
Well, here's the funny thing when you kind of think about this. Max Fried, who looks like he could be on the verge of a Cy Young contender, went the pick after Almora. Andrew Heaney, who's had his up and downs with the Angels, went ninth. But when you get down to 16, Lucas Giolito was the 16th pick in that round. You know, and I know it took him some time to develop, but, you know, it's definitely a, you know, would have been a good pick for a team to make.
Yeah, yeah, and as you said, it took him a couple years to learn what he was doing, but it looks like he's turned the corner and he's going to be a top flight pitcher for a long time.
Yeah, you know, and then one of the biggest busts of all time, Mark Appel was taken in this draft eighth by the Pirates. Now he didn't sign; he stayed in school. And he ended up being selected by the Astros with the first pick of the next year, the 2013 draft. And nothing but trouble, you know, unfortunately for this guy. He actually, I don't believe he ever reached the majors with the Astros. Let me see his stats here. Yeah, he didn't. He never pitched in the majors for the Astros. You know, I thought he had a cup of coffee with the Phillies, but it just, you know, between injuries and everything else that, you know, kind of worked out, his career lasted 12 major league innings.
It's not even a cup of coffee by today's standards.
Right. You know, and I mean, obviously, you know, we've had the issues here, you know, the Cubs. I mean, I'm sure if I threw the name Mark Pryor at you, you know, you would understand, who I believe is actually the Dodgers pitching coach.
He is.
As of now. So,
he definitely is.
At least Pryor had that one good year. You know, Appel didn't even get that.
Well, I guess perfect pitching technique doesn't always work out for you, does it?
No, you know, and that was the thing. They said he would never have arm problems because of his his mechanics, and he pretty much had nothing but arm problems.
Yeah, it that was not a pretty sight, and that's a shame that a guy with his talent would have all these difficulties over the years, and I guess his mechanics weren't as good as everybody thought they were going to be.
Yeah, apparently, or his body just wasn't as strong.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, you got to question if maybe he wasn't physically, you know, ready or capable to handle, you know, the wear and tear of being a Major League Baseball player.
But I guess he's doing a pretty good job for the Dodgers right now as their pitching coach.
Yeah, you know, they have a good young staff. You know, they always seem to find a quality young starting pitcher. I mean, you know, they've got so many, it's not even funny. So, you know, they do a nice job there of, you know, identifying starting pitching and knowing how to handle it. So it's worked out.
It has, but they spend so much money on their payroll, and it's, and how does an average team compete with the money that they dole out to these top flight players they seem to always acquire?
No, you know, and it's difficult. You know, I mean, there's a few teams in the league that can spend the kind of money the Dodgers can. You know, it's just the question always becomes, will they?
Yeah, the Dodgers and the Yankees, and certainly don't skimp when it comes to paying exorbitant salaries for their players.
It's the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Cubs that are the big four teams with the money. But it just depends on if they're willing and, you know, want to spend it.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't worked out very well for Boston the last few years.
No, you know, but that's, you know, they made some bad decisions. You know, they picked up Nathan Eovaldi in free agency, paid him a lot of money. They paid Chris Sale a lot of money. You know, they paid J.D. Martinez a lot of money. And when it came to pay the guy they really needed to pay a lot of money to, Mookie Betts, they really couldn't afford it and wanted to stay under the luxury cap and ended up shipping him off in what's probably going to be one of the worst trades in Red Sox history.
Indeed. And I don't see them competing favorably with the Yankees over the next few seasons.
You know, I think if their pitching can get healthy and they have a healthy Chris Sale and a healthy Eduardo Rodriguez, that gives them an opportunity. You know, neither guy pitched this year for them. You know, and if you can push Eovaldi back to where he's the 3 or 4 starter, and you can live with the 20 starts he's going to give you a year because of whatever injury he picks up.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they could hang around, but you know, the Yankees are always going to be good, and of course you got the Rays to deal with. But
exactly.
You know, teams get hurt, things happen. So you know, maybe.
Is Sale's going to be pitching at all? He's not going to. Is he pitching in 2021, or is he done for the year already?
You know, as far as I know, he's going to be back. I didn't see a time frame on him, but as far as I know, he'll be returning. You know, either for the full season or at some point in time. So.
Well, we'll see if he can come back to his original level when he does come back, though. You never know.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously, you know, we don't know that. I mean, there's no way. You know, some guys come back better, some guys come back worse. So, you know, we'll have to see how it goes. But all right, there was some other non-baseball related topics today that I wanted to run at you here before we get out of time. The NBA is attempting to figure out what they're going to do for their 2021 season. It seems like they're trying to decide if they're going to start around Christmas Day or if they're going to wait for Martin Luther King Day. Apparently, and I don't know why those are the two dates that it has to be one or the other, but that seems to be where they're at right now, and they're talking about a 72-game regular season. They would like to do the play-in tournament again like they did this year, which was stupid, but, you know, they'll get the money. They would have no All-Star game or All-Star weekend, but they would give the players a 2-week break at the middle of the season just like they would for the All-Star week, which is, again, incredibly stupid, but LeBron will want the time off to spend with his family and then go to Miami and Dallas for a football game. instead of spending time with his family. So do you
why have they decided to cut down to 10 games out of their schedule?
Because they're going to start later. So 10 games is, I guess, the number they decided on.
Yeah, my gut feeling is they're going to start playing in December, and I think they could have worked out a way to play a full season, but what do I know? I mean, they could have played an extra game a week or to make up for it, but we'll see how it works out. And I'm not sure, as the NHL, the hockey, going to do the same thing, or are they planning on playing a full schedule for next season?
You know, the last I heard from hockey, they were playing a full schedule, but we'll have to see. Now, remember, that 72-game regular season doesn't accommodate for those play-in games. So depending on how many play-in games there are, a team may be playing a full 82-game schedule.
It might work out that way, too. That's right.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, and apparently their plan is they want to have the season over before the Summer Olympics in Japan so the players can go and compete there.
Well, one can only hope that the COVID-19 will be over with by the summer of next year, or at least a vaccine will be in place so that they can play the Olympics on schedule.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, obviously there's a lot of things that go into this before any of it actually happens. That's what they're hoping to do, and, you know, where it kind of works out. And, you know, my guess is a lot of this has to do with them trying to assist the Lakers in finding their way back into the championship race, because that they base a lot of their marketing and stuff literally just around LeBron James. Depending on which NBA commercials you see, you may not realize there's any other players in the league. So, you know, I'm sure, again, because the NBA is fixed, and you're not even going to convince me another way. They're doing the best they can to get LeBron back into the championship. So
you're saying they're looking for a back-to-back, for back-to-back repeat for the Lakers for next season?
Either that, or I think what they hope for is that the Warriors can return to form because they'll be healthy. You know, Steph Curry will be healthy, Klay Thompson will be healthy, Draymond Green will be healthy, so they'll have their big compliment back. Obviously they won't have Kevin Durant, but I think they're hoping for a return so they can get Lakers, Warriors, Clippers and really kind of feature those three teams, because the top of the West is still better than the East. Unless the Nets can hit pay dirt with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, the only real interest in the East is Milwaukee with Antetokounmpo, and then Boston, if they can kind of put it together, but that's a lot of ifs there.
Yeah, the problem the NBA will have next season for the regular season, promoting the West Coast teams and the late starting times for the Lakers, the Warriors, and the Clippers.
Well, you know, that and the fact that nobody watches the NBA the way the ratings went this year. You know, you thought the baseball ratings were down. Take a look at how far down the NBA ratings were. It was at 40% at some point in time.
Yeah, you think that if they allow the fans back into the arenas, that will help their ratings for next season?
You know, it'll help it a little bit, but the NBA doesn't seem to realize that what I've been preaching here basically since we started the podcast is, nobody cares about the way this game is played. You know, when it's dunks and guys standing around waiting to shoot three-pointers, it's boring to watch.
It is definitely boring.
So I can't watch more than a minute or two of it before I get frustrated and I go away. And the only thing I'm really looking for is a score. Because you've mentioned how many times they don't play defense. You literally can't because they'll blow the whistle on you. So,
talking about defense, it used to be in years past that you would definitely start to see defense coming into play when the playoffs started.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that really holds true anymore, which is really unfortunate.
No, you know, and I mean, again, the, you know, just the blatant favoritism of a guy like LeBron. I mean, you know, don't forget, he got foul calls on teams he was playing when he fell over his own teammates. You know, and they don't review those, even though it was clearly wasn't a foul. So, you know, and, you know, just some of the things they call, you know, it's ridiculous. And again, you know, nobody wants to watch that.
No.
So, you know.
And I don't think, like, there are certain things you can review when whether it was a two-point shot, a three-point shot, but a foul call can't be reviewed. Is that correct?
No, not to my knowledge. I don't know all the things you can, review, but I don't believe fouls are one of them. You can review if it's a flagrant,
right,
or a non-flagrant, but you can't review like some of the foul calls. Well, basically all of the foul calls LeBron gets that aren't fouls.
Can you imagine how dull the game would be, even duller, if they allowed challenges for a foul call? The game would take forever.
Yeah. That's one of the other problems they have, is their review system is a complete joke. You know, it takes forever, and then, you know, we have all this technology, and they send the refs to a scorer's table, and they look at a television screen that's 8-10 inches big.
That's true. Yeah, that does make it a little bit more difficult to make a decision.
You know, but I mean, I completely understand why didn't watch and aren't watching. And, you know, maybe if they get almost a, you know, semi-full season, or, you know, maybe if they don't have as much competition as before, maybe some of the fans will come back, but not all of them.
No. The sport certainly seems to be on the decline. But I think the NHL is holding its own in terms of interest. And, of course, they're still the number four sport of the major sports anyway.
Yeah, I mean, humorously, the sport that's taken the smallest hit in the ratings, and I don't really understand this, has been NASCAR.
Well, at one time, NASCAR was the only game in town, wasn't it, during the heat of the pandemic?
To start off,
one of the first sports.
But it didn't last too long. So, yeah, it's just one of those odd things. You know, football hasn't taken a huge hit. The NHL took a little bit of a hit. Baseball took a little bit. And the NBA took a giant hit.
Yeah,
so,
well, certainly because of the product, the three-point shooting and non-defense. To me, it makes the game ridiculous, and I have difficulty watching more than a minute or two of a game.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a it's a it really is. But all right, well, Stu and I are going to go start our weekend if I can find the music here. There we go. All right, everybody.